Colin Callis, you look older.
Thanks.
Happy birthday.
Slightly older.
Yeah, thank you.
You share a birthday with my nephew, Roger Federer.
Some royalty. There's probably quite a few people. It happens to be the day we internationally celebrate cats too. So there you go.
There we go. It's the makeup. That's what the difference is. Now, I read a book a couple of years ago which said war, what's wrong with it, or something along those lines, basically suggesting war is the best thing ever because it you have to innovate in order to win the war, and those that don't innovate fall by the wayside and die, but the innovators continue to succeed. And you look at World War One, and aviation stemmed from that. You look at World War Two, and and war's a terrible idea, but it does lead in many respects to new thinking of human problems.
Yeah, it pushes us. And I would never want to make the argument to advocate that war is a good thing. It isn't. However, when big things happen, people are more open to say, okay, what do we do? How do we deal with this? And I wanted to do a check-in in the week where NASA announced the set of astronauts that will be first manned flights on SpaceX. And he himself, you know, with the Tesla share price recovering and then him deciding, well, I might want to go private and do everything else, that a much smaller event that people haven't been necessarily noting, that he popped down to the annual SpaceX Hyperloop pod competition, which they have every year, and every year they're getting slightly better. And the Hyperloop is one of his early, although maybe more really out there kind of ideas for transforming transport. It's kind of like a train on steroids, a plane on the ground kind of idea. And it's kind of starting to form part of this hype cycle thing. So where is the Hyperloop in the hype cycle? Because there are now Virgin has the Hyperloop one. There are a good four or five startups that are looking to create it. There are test tracks in France, in America. Dubai's actively studying to see whether or not it's going to be practical. They want to build a track potentially between Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And France has also got some test tracks going on there. So the notion is, wow, well, great idea on paper. It seems like a wonderful thing. Will it succeed? And usually when you find out if something's going to succeed in the future, go look at how many times it failed in the past.
Right,
and,
yes.
And the best example for me, because I think one of the greatest innovations we've had since wheels and fire was the shipping container, the intermodal container, if you want its proper name. And, you know, it wasn't like it didn't have lots of people talking about it. It wasn't like we weren't trading since ancient times. But it took only till the 50s before somebody said, right, let's make this happen. And unfortunately, that thing was a war. First the Korean and then the Vietnam War that got the military, the U.S. military particularly, to start listening to the ideas of people like Malcolm McLean, who kind of gets credit for saying he was the driving force to finally get the wheels turning. Because you needed to change ships, trucks, railways, and then the unions who worked on the dock sides to get all this to happen. And while everybody agreed it was a great idea, nobody was willing to change. It was just too easy to stick with the regular stuff. And so in that case, war provided the emphasis, that sort of shift to get people to switch. And once they started switching, well, then people couldn't switch fast enough. And now we have the likes of Alibaba. Jack Ma is in South Africa at the moment, who says any product can be created anywhere and sold anywhere in the world, thanks to the ability for us to ship it absolutely anywhere. And for some products, the shipping gets so cheap because it's so efficient that effectively it's free. And that's the crazy thing. When you look at some of these ships, some of them are half a kilometer long and will hold 21,000 of those containers on them and ship them all around the world, and then have automated things, packing and unpacking them, working out exactly where they need to go, and be sure that they won't get stolen, that they'll be looked after, and all these other good things. So that's the context that says, okay, war could do that, and we don't want war. What could fix this thing with a Hyperloop? How can we get transport going better? Because back in the 70s, the French, bless them, said, our trains are not going fast enough. We want them to go faster. And they worked out what the problem was. Wheels. Train wheels back in the 70s were terrible. The train would rattle backwards and forwards. And actually, even now, not that you get many South African trains that are working all that well.
You just got to go on any metro rail service and you know exactly what the French were dealing with.
Yeah, that wobble side to side and the screeching of metal on metal every now and then. They said, listen, let's get rid of it. Let's get, first of all, the English came up with this notion of a hover train, because they'd done hover tracks. Actually, it was the French, but they copied that idea of making the train float on air. And then they said, no, let's use magnets, magnetic levitation. And the French, the Japanese and the English all were building something to go along with that. And it looked fantastic on paper. But the catch is, like so many innovations, like so many technologies, there was just too much old track around. And getting people to say, oh, well, what do we do with all the old track? They're like, you know what? I really love your idea, but I don't think I'm going to get rid of those tracks. And while it wasn't just the tracks, it was also a major downturn in the economy in the 70s and all sorts of oil crises. It got people to say, okay, well, let's try and improve what we can do with it. And they did. To their credit, they made better train wheels. But it was an incremental change rather than a massive shift change. And so the Hyperloop seems to be in that sort of same game. Because effectively, if you don't know what the Hyperloop is, you're going to take a tube, remove most of the air of it, so basically you've got a vacuum. You're then going to stick a little pod inside it and then accelerate that pod to almost the speed of sound.
There's nothing new in that idea. And I will tell you that because at Birch's, the gentleman's outfitters in Grahamstown, where you would go and you would go and pay, you would go and order your stuff, and you would go to the counter, you get a handwritten chit, you would then hand over the cash, and they would put it into a tube. They would then pull a string, and this tube would be go whiz across. There was a whole range of strings across the shop. And if you've ever been to Grahamstown, I don't know if Birch's is still in the same place and whether they still use the same system. I hope not, because it took a long time. But the money went whizzing across. This tube went whizzing across the room to the accounts department. The accounts department got the receipt. They got the cash. They calculated the change. They put it back into the pod. They whizzed it back across to where you were. And it came back all perfect. The cash was all handled upstairs. Nobody had to touch it. It's the same principle.
It is. In fact, back in the 1800s, they were already building some of those old original railways. And then they had a metal pipe and they had a leather strap to supposedly keep the air in it. And a little sort of, it'll be kind of piston underneath it. They'd suck the air out of one side of the pipe and blow air into the other one and the train would go. Now, the catch was that leather strap but sort of wore out. They lost the air. It was very hard to process up. So they just didn't have the technology to deliver the stuff. And the question is, do we have the technology now to take a metal pipe, 600, well, depending on how many kilometers you want to make this thing, but long pipe, remove all the air from it so now it's really under pressure. It wants to just collapse in on itself. Then put people in a smaller pipe and send them through that at 1,000 kilometers an hour.
And not have your body disintegrate in the process. Yes.
Yeah, because if you had to stop in an emergency, you don't just open the door because you're in a vacuum.
Yes.
And if something had to happen to the pipe and it collapsed, you're going to have a shockwave of air come flying up the pipe at the speed of sound. Well, possibly even a little bit faster, depending on what caused the rupture. So it's got dangers all over the show. But that doesn't mean it's not a great idea, not something worth pursuing, because in all of these cases, we might not get the fancy tube. But if we can make the train wheels go a little better, and Elon Musk's big picture is we want to save humanity. We've got to get off the fossil fuels. We've got to make moving around a little easier. And if you imagine a train that can get you from city to city in minutes, then effectively Cape Town doesn't have, Joburg doesn't have a property price problem, because you can be living in Knysna and travel to Cape Town and have that as your morning commute. And while you're sitting on this pod, you can just be reading something, doing whatever you like. And that can be replicated all around the world. And so besides the travel, the ease of where you stay, and the notions of Jack Ma saying, well, transport and travel, because goods can go in these things too, then it's worth our while pursuing it. Let's just not do it because of war.
Let's not do it because of war. Let's not go to war over it. Colin Cullis, thank you very much indeed. Colin Cullis is our guest this evening, our special business unusual correspondent on The Money Show.